Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, March 10th. 2022. Rooster County hears EMS vendor proposals. Table's decision as deadline looms. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Rooster County. Rooster County Commissioner's Court held a special meeting last Friday to hear citizen comments and presentations from three privately run emergency medical service providers vying for the contract to respond to the area's 911 calls. North Brewster County was suddenly left without an EMS provider this past December after Michael Scudder, who operated the area's ambulances since 1985, passed away unexpectedly. Terlingua Fire and EMS has stepped in to fill the service gap with an impending deadline of April 30th, while the county and city decide the future of the area's emergency services. County commissioners, the City of Alpine, and an EMS task force are working together to select a new service provider. Interested vendors include American Medical Response, AMR, Emergent Air, and City Ambulance Service. All have existing ties to West Texas and a desire to expand their services to the area. First and foremost, we want a service that will respond to emergencies quickly with a well-trained and professional crew. In my opinion, each of the three vendors is well-established and capable of running the EMS service, said Big Bend Regional Hospital District Executive Director J.D. Newsom, who is a member of the EMS task force. I think the decision will come down to which of the vendors will be the best partner and fit with the community. All three vendors agreed to operate North Brewster County EMS services on pre-existing subsidies previously provided to Scudder by the county and city, $13,397.75 a month from the city, and $15,000 a month from the county, adding up to a total of $336,000 a year. In previous meetings, County Commissioners Judge Eleazar Cano and Terlingua Fire and EMS's Greg Hennington expressed doubt that any private EMS provider would take on the project, citing a lack of profitability due to the vast rural area and low call volumes. In 2021, Alpine EMS responded to a total of 1,200 calls. A Big Bend Regional Medical Center-run EMS was on the table as of early February, but that option has since been dropped in lieu of a private vendor, said Newsom. While a county-run EMS option has not been officially ruled out, Newsom indicated that an outside vendor now seems most likely given the time crunch. The City of Alpine put out a request for qualifications, RFQ, for EMS providers on February 1st and received applications from AMR and City Ambulance Services. Emergent Air was received by Brewster County directly, said City Secretary Jeffrey Calderon. Judge Cano previously stated he hoped a transition of the new EMS provider would be underway by now, but the Commissioner's Court ultimately voted to table a decision on the matter, both in Friday's special meeting and this Tuesday's regular meeting, in order to give Alpine City Council more time to review vendor proposals. The Council will hear the provider's presentations this week, and the Commissioner's Court will then meet again on March 24th. Authorities will select an EMS provider by March 30th, said Judge Cano. Present at Friday's special meeting to hear EMS provider presentations were Judge Cano, all commissioners with the exception of Ruben Ortega, as well as many city council members, city administrators, and members of the public. One resident who spoke at the start of the meeting advocated for a locally run EMS, and another urged the importance of citizen feedback. Presentations focused on 911 ground services, but all vendors have the capacity to provide emergency air services as well. Potential EMS providers. Lee King, principal of Emergent Air, a company based out of El Paso, was first up to present to the commissioner's court. Emergent offers air ambulances as well as ground services. King said Emergent is experienced in flying into the area and is already in discussions with the hospital regarding an interfacility truck. Emergent currently services El Paso, McAllen, and Roswell, New Mexico. King promised flexibility and offered to act temporarily should a county-run EMS eventually materialize. Without robust data on the previous EMS, King said it was hard to gauge the scope of services, but Emergent would work closely with the county going forward to assess needs. As for staffing and equipment, he said they could pull staff from El Paso, provide training, and utilize used ambulances for the time being. King said renting the fire station, where EMS is currently dispatched from, for their operation would also be a possibility. King said that Emergent was up for the challenge of providing emergency services in a sprawling region full of unpaved rural roads. Commissioner Sarah Calando said whatever entity is chosen to take on EMS for Brewster County will have to be aware of long drive times and accidents in remote areas, making them unavailable for 911 calls that might come in elsewhere. King said they would likely pursue mutual aid agreements to help in those situations. Hennington asked if Emergent would be open to adding a local physician to their medical advisory group and join the Texas J Regional Advisory Council, JRAC, a local trauma system network, to which King was amenable. Next up was City Ambulance Service, represented by four staff members. City Ambulance is the third largest private ambulance company based out of Texas, with over 100 trucks across the state. They currently run EMS in Crane County and Upton County's Emergency Services District, both located in the West Texas region. The company also has an existing relationship with the Big Bend Regional Medical Center, where they assist with discharges and interfacility transfers. Their ambulances are fit to a mobile intensive care unit level and can accommodate behavioral health issues, said Richard Trevino, Vice President of Business Development at City Ambulance Service. He said the company would hire locals whenever possible and seek to be a part of the community. We like to hire locals because those local medics, they know the area, they know what's going on, they know the community, they know the service that's required, said Trevino. On the subject of community involvement, City Ambulance often gives tours of their ambulances to schools and churches, said Trevino, and performs educational outreach in the form of CPR and Stop the Bleed training. Trevino said they intend to allocate an ambulance to cover civic events like football games while ensuring another ambulance is available for emergencies elsewhere. City Ambulance stations their crews in hotels to funnel money back into the local economy, they said. Representatives said they offer competitive pay and are already a part of JRAC. J Judge Cano brought up a potential dispatch system, and city ambulance representatives said, as with other counties they service, they would likely use the sheriff's department dispatch system. Trevino assured commissioners the company will work to have a local face on the operational side. Trevino said they can start in 30 days and would like to be able to continue to utilize the fire department building. Last to present was Randy Weideman, regional director for American Medical Response. Weideman said AMR has been serving the area for 34 years with EMS in Pecos and AeroCare, their air ambulance service, in Fort Stockton. AMR currently operates in 42 states, said Weideman, and provides ground ambulance services for 40 Texas counties. AMR is the main contractor working with the Federal Emergency Management Agency to provide ground and air ambulance services in emergency situations. Their Office of Emergency Management is based out of Dallas, said Weideman, where 911 calls would be routed. AMR operates a registered nurse line, which can help cut down on ambulance needs, said Weideman. Commissioner Mike Payanes inquired whether AMR would have bilingual staff available, to which Weideman assured him the company did. AMR also pays EMTs to go to school in order to become paramedics and prioritizes training, said Weideman. The company would strive to hire locally and would have a local medical director. As for community involvement, AMR would host Stop the Bleed and CPR training for local citizens, would provide an ambulance for large civic events, and consider using the fire department for operations, said Weideman. After the presentations, Vernon Tucker, a local EMT who previously worked with Alpine EMS and is now commuting to Pecos, said if a private vendor was chosen, an anonymous platform operated by the county for citizens to rate services and provide feedback would be paramount. As an EMT with 12 years of experience locally, Tucker expressed a desire to serve his local community and work with a local supervisor. Tucker encouraged the commissioners to review potential EMS providers' Glassdoor pages, where employees leave anonymous reviews of their employment experiences. There are quite a few negative employee reviews for some of the services that were here today, said Tucker. I'm looking at that, and I'm going, that's a nice paycheck, but is it worth the stress for me and my family? County-run EMS. Hennington, who has been working closely with the county throughout the new EMS planning process, discussed a county-run EMS option. The proposed budget was based on 3 people on duty at all times, performing a 3 days-on, 4 days-off schedule. Hennington voiced concerns about acquiring new ambulances in a timely manner and said it would take the remainder of the year to get a county-run system up and running. Hennington said if Terlingua Fire and EMS were to extend help past the original April 30th deadline, they would need staffing assistance. Commissioner Sarah Colando asked Hennington, who previously argued a public-run EMS would have the best staying power for constituents, why he seemed to now be favoring a private vendor route. Hennington clarified he would still be on board with a public option. I mean, if you guys decided you want to go the county route, I still like the idea. I think there's still a romanticism to building us a really first-class service. You get it in Terlingua, you could do it here, said Hennington. But South County is a designated emergency services district, which allows them to funnel sales tax revenue into emergency services. In North County, a different funding model would have to be established. Colando said because they solicited proposals from companies with the understanding that the subsidies would not increase, She expressed concerns that the companies would end up saddling customers calling 911 with higher prices. The people who call 911 are going to be paying for this service, and whether their money stays in Brewster County with a public-run entity or whether it goes out to an international, national, or a statewide company, what is going to get them the most bang for their buck, said Colando. Discussions around the selection of a provider continued at Tuesday's regular commissioners' court meeting, where officials tackled criticism of the process. Some citizens had expressed concerns regarding the transparency of the EMS task force meetings and the level of involvement on the city level. "I am a little bit taken back by the comments, 'We're having secret meetings and we're conspiring.' We're trying to figure this thing out, folks. That's it," said Cano. Commissioner Jim Westerman, who represents Precinct 1, said his constituents were reaching out to inquire why the court was delaying in voting on the EMS providers and to express frustrations regarding meeting upon meeting without a decision. He expressed frustration with the process, but acknowledged procedural setbacks and an unexpected recent increase in city involvement. "The city was involved in all this. They had representatives the whole time. And so here we are, 6 weeks out from our self-imposed deadline, and we want to revisit everything again. I have no answers for my constituents other than to say, stay tuned," said Westerman. "But this is a rather unfortunate development right at the end." Judge Cano rebutted, stating majority votes were needed in both Commissioner's Court and City Council in order to approve a new EMS provider because they each hold separate contracts with the provider. "We are winding down versus picking up again," said Cano. "We would like to reach a consensus as soon as possible." EMS provider proposals for AMR and City Ambulance can be found online on the City of Alpine's website, https://bit.ly/3kytqws. Starting on page 35, and Emergent Air's proposal can be found https://bit.ly/3kx7ime. Photo courtesy of Carolyn McCartney. A small wildfire broke out alongside Texas Highway 17 North on Sunday evening around 5:30 p.m., scorching a swath of grass between a half acre and an acre in length. Small wildfire breaks out north of town as fire chief warns of extreme conditions. By Allegra Hobbs, Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. The Marfa Volunteer Fire Department responded on Sunday to a small wildfire burning just outside the city limits along Texas State Highway 17 North, which left an expanse of grass between a half acre and acre in size singed black. The fire was prevented from spreading too far due to bare patches that acted as natural fire breaks, according to Marfa Fire Chief Gary Mitschke, and the remaining flames were quickly brought under control by the volunteer firefighters who responded to a call around 5:30 p.m. Given the low humidity and high winds that permeated the region on Sunday, noted Mitschke, the incident could have been much worse had those bare patches not been present. "On Sunday, we were under extreme wildfire conditions, so we were lucky on this one," said Mitschke. "It kind of ran out of fuel there. That helped a lot. Otherwise, it would have been much bigger than it was." Much of West Texas including the Marfa area, was under a red flag warning, meaning extreme fair weather conditions, beginning Sunday morning and into mid-evening that day. But the abundance of dry grass, which acts as fuel for wildfires, plus low humidity and high winds remain a source of concern, said Mitschke, creating conditions such that the tiniest spark could ignite a bigger problem. As for Sunday's fire, Mitschke said he wasn't sure what had caused it. It very well could have been a cigarette tossed out of someone's car window, he said, or a vehicle muffler or a chain dragging on the ground. It's a good indicator of where we're at with the dry fuels in the county, said Mitschke. We're to the point where just about anything's going to start a fire, so it's pretty bad. Local painter and designer Carolyn McCartney, who lives on the far north side of town, was on a walk Sunday evening when she saw a whole bunch of smoke. She walked over the hill to see its source and saw that the fire department was already on the scene, extinguishing the flames. It was very alarming, said McCartney. I live in that neighborhood, and the wind was very, very strong, and if they hadn't got there, it would have gone straight up the hill. It would have been devastating. The fire serves as a reminder to observe the burn ban currently in effect in Presidio County, which prohibits actions such as smoking without using an ashtray, driving or parking in tall dead grass, lighting campfires, and welding in grassy areas. The spring can be an especially hazardous season, said Mitschke, as March and April bring high winds and, quote, dry lightning, end quote, or lightning without accompanying rain to alleviate the dry conditions. All indications are that the conditions that we're in right now are very similar to what we had back in 2011. And that's when we had the big wildfire outbreaks, not just here in Presidio County, but also over the whole state, said the fire chief. In April of 2011, an outbreak of wildfires scorched swaths of West Texas, including Fort Davis and Marfa. Everybody needs to be aware of the extreme conditions we're under and be very careful, said Mitschke. Grant program could bring aerospace training centers to Alpine Van Horn by Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBenSentinel.com. West Texas, a coalition of El Paso entities, is vying for a federal grant program to support an aerospace and defense project for the region, which could bring training centers to Van Horn and to Alpine's Sol Ross State University, with the goal of training locals to take on jobs in the growing industry. El Paso Makes, a partnership that includes the El Paso Chamber and the University of Texas at El Paso W.M. Keck Center for 3D Innovation and Aerospace Center, helps comprise a new coalition called the West Texas Aerospace and Defense Manufacturing Coalition, a coalition whose proposed project was named in December as a finalist in the U.S. Economic Development Administration's $1 billion Build Back Better Regional Challenge. The project, titled Reclaiming Aerospace and Defense Manufacturing Dominance Through Frontier Technologies, puts forth a plan to reinvigorate economic growth and job opportunities not only in El Paso, but throughout West Texas. A project summary available through the EDA says the grant would, quote, jumpstart our efforts to tackle the enduring challenges in our region of lagging incomes, brain drain, and the hollowing out of a once vibrant manufacturing base. The project identifies low wages and a dearth of STEM occupations as problems plaguing the region, and notes economic setbacks have been worsened by the pandemic. It also identifies the booming aerospace and defense industry as a potential source of growth. West Texas is not only a manufacturing hub and close to a number of military bases, the coalition says, but is also home to the spaceport of Blue Origin, the aerospace company founded by billionaire Jeff Bezos. In July of last year, the company's first manned flight took place at the launch site in Culberson County, just outside of Van Horn. In addition to a proposed 250-acre site near the El Paso International Airport that would house manufacturers, design centers, and a training center, the project pitches a plan for supporting facilities in surrounding rural areas, which includes, quote, satellite centers for aerospace and defense supply chain innovation network for manufacturers, which will host training centers both in Van Horn and at Sulross State University in Alpine. Blue Origin's spaceport investment in Culberson County should be matched with public investment that provides area residents a pathway to jobs at Blue Origin and provides area manufacturers new business opportunities, reads the project summary. Those involved in the project have also been seeking the support of surrounding communities beyond Alpine and Van Horn, including Marfa. The Rio Grande Council of Governments, RIOCOG, the Association of Local Governments, which includes Presidio, Brewster, and Jeff Davis counties, has helped facilitate community outreach during the application process, said RIOCOG Executive Director Annette Gutierrez. RIOCOG brought the project, along with a request for a show of support, to Marfa City Council, which on Tuesday night passed a motion signaling support for the project. The city had been asked to show their commitment via a concrete offer of some kind, whether through an offering of physical space, employees' time, or promotion via social media. Council members discussed the possibility of offering space in the Marfa Activity Center, MAC, building, or at the landfill, and of offering promotion efforts. Ultimately, a motion was passed authorizing City Manager Mandy Roan to continue conversations with RIOCOG and to offer those amenities as they see fit. The Phase 2 applications are due on March 15th. The grants will be awarded in September, according to Gutierrez, who estimated that the facilities could be up and running by the last quarter of fiscal year 2023. Migrant from Guatemala injured in accident involving garbage truck, by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. Around 8 a.m. on Monday, Marfa first responders were called to the scene of an accident in the alley between the Hotel St. George and Stripes. A garbage disposal truck was making its regular weekly rounds when the driver heard screaming and rushed to stop the automated compactor system. Those gathered at the scene were horrified to find a man inside who had sustained serious injuries to both of his legs. The driver could hear screaming, but didn't know where it was coming from, explained Marfa Police Chief Esteban Marquez. He was looking at the sides of the vehicle first, but ended up looking into the camera that gives him a visual of what's going on in back. That's when he saw the individual's face. Marquez, whose office is steps away from the dumpster involved in the accident, was first on the scene. Despite the fact that the man was in a tremendous amount of pain, he was able to answer basic questions. He had been traveling from Guatemala with a group of other migrants and was somehow separated from them. He had stopped in the alley to rest when the temperature dropped to just above freezing. The man crawled into the dumpster and covered himself in debris to keep warm. We could tell just by looking at him that he was very weak, Marquez said. He was telling us he hadn't eaten in a couple of days either, and that was all he could tell us before he started showing signs of going into shock. Around 8:10 a.m., Marfa EMS Director Bert Lagarde received a call from dispatch, and he quickly reported to the scene. Lagarde had to climb into the truck to assess the man's injuries. It was a very confined space, Lagarde remembered. There were three or four firefighters down in there with me, plus the patient. The first responders worked quickly to package the patient and carefully lift him up and out of the garbage truck using a litter called a Stokes basket. We had to package the patient into the basket and safely get him out of the garbage truck onto the roof, then off the roof of the garbage truck and into the ambulance, Lagarde said. It took some time. The patient was transported to Big Bend Regional Medical Center. The driver of the garbage truck could not be identified by press time. The city of Marfa does not operate its own garbage service and contracts with Republic Services to empty local dumpsters. We had information passed to us from Border Patrol that this is not the first time that we've had individuals hiding in a dumpster, Marquez explained. Luckily, those individuals were able to get out. This individual was suffering from some kind of fatigue. He simply told us he just wasn't strong enough or fast enough to get out of the dumpster in time. The incident required cooperation from City Hall, Marfa PD, Marfa EMS, and the Marfa Fire Department, alongside other individuals who helped that morning with patient transport, translation, and coordinating all of the first responders. We work well with other agencies, Lagarde said. Marquez agreed. It was a good team effort.
Hello, this is Cindy, reading from the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, March 10th. Propane Fire Destroys Vehicles by Nathan Hewer. No one was injured and two vehicles received significant damage from a fire that was ignited near the propane filling tank at Love's Travel Stop in Fort Stockton on March 4th, according to Fort Stockton Fire Department Chief Jesse Dominguez. A van by the tank was completely burned and a bus was totaled from the fire in the incident. Dominguez reported on March 8th that the cause of the fire was unable to be determined by the Texas Railroad Commission, who completed their investigation on March 7th. The fire chief noted that the fire was ignited near the van and that the propane filling tank at Love's Travel Stop did not have a leak, according to the TRC. The propane tank at Love's will be removed in the coming weeks and replaced at a later date. It is not available for current use. The fire department received a call regarding the incident at 12:45 p.m. and had the fire put out approximately 30 minutes later. Dominguez said that no explosion occurred and the Love's Travel Stop building was not damaged. Our firefighters did an outstanding job by quickly extinguishing this fire out. It could have been a much worse scenario, he said. PCHC to Consider Blacksmith Shop in City by Megan Waring. Educating younger generations about local history. That tradition will continue as the county is looking at bringing back a blacksmith shop to historic Fort Stockton. At the February 28th regular meeting, the Pecos County Commissioner's Court authorized the county's historical commission to construct the shop after they go through the surveying process, which will ensure that it will be located on the county's property. We want to put a small blacksmith shop on the property where the Hovey School and the Rollins Sibley House is, said Bob Hader of the Pecos County Historical Commission. We want to replicate the one that was here that they tore down where the nursing home is. The Historical Commission is hoping to build the shop using their own labor and contributions without any additional cost to the county. Hader explained that this would be an opportunity to educate kids. Our main reason for doing this is for the kids to be able to see something like this on Texas History Day or Old Fort Days, Hader said. We want to show them that every town used to have a blacksmith shop. They built everything. They didn't have welders. Blacksmiths sharpened plows. made horseshoes, and built everything for the community. Old Hospital demolished in Fort Stockton. The old Pecos County Hospital was demolished on March 3rd by numerous entities within the county. All the county precincts tore down the structure with the aid of the IRA and crew of Precinct 3. Tearing down the old structure was a one-day job with an excavator and a bulldozer. The large pile of rubble will be an extensive project of hauling off the debris in the coming weeks. Previously, the Fort Stockton Economic Development Corporation provided $100,000 for the asbestos remediation of the building via the City Council's approval, while the county paid the remaining $68,405 for the asbestos removal. Pain Management to be offered at PCMH by Megan Waring. Pecos County Memorial Hospital will give residents more healthcare accessibility beginning next month via a new pain management clinic in Fort Stockton. It's really important for us to be able to offer these pain management services in rural areas, said Lee Weber, acute and chronic pain management specialist. You don't have, in most places, the provider available or the space available, or maybe the hospital doesn't know that there is something like that out there. Sometimes people charge a ridiculous amount to come into a rural place like this. Weber will be heading up the clinic at PCMH the first Thursday and Friday of each month, beginning April 7th and April 8th. The clinic will treat all types of pain, including back, knee, arm, leg, foot, head and neck, joint and arthritis, headaches and migraines, pinched nerves, herniated discs, sciatica, musculoskeletal, fibromyalgia, and complex regional pain syndrome. Instead of just being treated with narcotics or how they are being treated right now through the primary care clinic, this would be somewhere the primary care physicians, the family physicians, and nurse practitioners can refer patients with chronic pain, Weber explained. Within the clinic, both medical management, including treatment with narcotics and pain medicines and adjunct medicines, will be offered. The idea behind adjunct medicines being to wean down the narcotics or the dangerous medicines and controlled substances as much as possible using some of these other multimodal strategies, Weber said. The biggest portion is being able to offer interventional procedures such as different types of injections. The services that will be offered are listed below: long-term care and follow-up, medication regimens, treatment for chronic headaches, trigger point injections, epidural steroid injections, thoracic and lumbar, nerve root blocks, peripheral nerve root blocks, radiofrequency neuromodulation, chronic back and knee pain, arthritic joints, joint injections, facet blocks. These patients that are having chronic pain a lot of times can't drive in a car for 2 hours, Weber said. It's just too painful. To set up an appointment for April 7th or April 8th, please call 432-336-0700, option 0. Cactus Health Services to receive grant. Congressman Tony Gonzalez, Texas 23, announced on Monday that Cactus Health Services in Fort Stockton will receive $1 million in grant funds from the Department of Health and Human Services. I am proud to announce this critical health care funding for Fort Stockton, said Congressman Gonzalez. Expanding access to health care across the district creates healthier and better served communities.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, March 3rd. Voters give nod to Romo and Bean. Hanna and Bustos win re-election bids. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Locally contested races on the March 1st primary drew over 2,000 voters to the polls as Valerie Romo, Larry Hanna, Danny Bustos, and Roy Bean came away victorious. The voter turnout of 2012 ballots represents 29.3% of the 6,857 registered voters in Ward County. In the race for 143rd Judicial District Clerk of Ward County, Valerie Romo outdistanced Tommy Lujan by a count of 1,046, or 58.9%, to 730. Romo is currently the Court Administrator Assistant for District Judge Mike Swanson. Lujan is the current Chief Deputy for the current District Clerk, who did not seek re-election. Since there were no Democratic candidates, Romo will be the new District Clerk and will be given the oath of office on January 1, 2023. Republican incumbent Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna was successful in his re-election bid, topping challenger Joel Greiner. Hanna received 448 votes, or 65%, to 238 for Greiner. Hanna will be given the oath of office on January 1st, as there was no Democratic candidate. The race for Justice of the Peace Precinct 1 and 4 between incumbent Republican Danny Bustos topped challenger Dolores Navarrete. Bustos received 58% of the ballots, 378, to 265 for Navarrete. Bustos has held the position since 2019 when he defeated longtime J.P. Pascual Olivas, and Navarrete was the former chief deputy for Olivas. Bustos will also be sworn in on January 1st, since there was no Democratic candidate. Local businessman Roy Bean topped Elizabeth Morales with a vote count of 812, or 69%, to 358 for Morales. Incumbent J.P. Elizabeth Polanco did not run for re-election. Bean is a longtime Monahans businessman and is a captain on the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department and will be given the oath of office on January 1st. Morales is the current chief deputy for Polanco. Other local incumbents did not have a challenger in the Republican primary, and there were no Democratic candidates. County Judge Greg Colley received 1,573 votes. County Clerk Denise Valles received 1,530 votes. County Treasurer Carly Ennis received 1,475 votes. County Commissioner Precinct 4 Eddie Nelms received 309 votes. And Republican County Chair Hal Upchurch received 1,434 votes. Republican State Representative District 81 Brooks Landgraf soundly topped challenger Casey Gray with 83% of the local vote, 1,451, to 287 for Gray. District-wide, Landgraf received 81% of the vote, with 6,969 votes to 1,621 for Gray. For State Senator District 31, Kevin Sparks had a narrow majority over Stormy Bradley, Tim Reed, and Jesse Quackenbush. Sparks received 822 votes, or 51% of the local vote. Bradley received 500, Reed received 213, and Quackenbush received 53. District-wide, Sparks' margin was even higher, with 55.2% of the vote. Reed received 22%, Bradley 15%, and Quackenbush 6%. There were no Democratic candidates. U.S. Representative District 23 Tony Gonzalez easily topped challengers Alma Arredondo Lynch and Alia Garcia in the Republican primary. Gonzalez garnered 77.9% district-wide to 15.3% for Lynch and 6.8%. In Ward County, Gonzalez received 77% to 13% for Garcia, and 9% for Lynch. Gonzalez will face John Lira, the Democratic Party winner, in the fall general election. Lyra received 56% of the vote to 43% for Priscilla Golden. Incumbent Republican Governor Greg Abbott won the nomination in a landslide with 1,242 votes locally, 69%. The closest of the seven other challengers was Alan B. West with 8%. Statewide, Abbott took 66% with a total of 1.26 million votes. Beto O'Rourke won the Democratic primary by a landslide, garnering 91% of the vote over Joy Diaz and Michael Cooper. Abbott and O'Rourke will face off in the fall general election. Election results are not final. Mississippi man indicted after fatal crash. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Ward County grand jury has indicted a Mississippi man accused of killing his passenger in a 2019 crash. William Jaden Foster, age 22, has been charged with manslaughter, a second-degree felony. According to count one on the indictment, which was handed down on September 15, 2021, Foster recklessly caused the death of Edwin Gonzalez on October 31, 2019, by driving his vehicle into a concrete barrier and failing to control his speed, failing to keep a proper lookout, by swerving, by driving his vehicle in an exhibition of the acceleration, or by driving and allowing the vehicle he operated into the concrete barrier. Count two of the indictment states Foster recklessly caused bodily injury to Edwin Gonzalez by driving his vehicle into a concrete barrier and failing to control his speed, failing to keep a proper lookout, by swerving, by driving his vehicle in an exhibition of the acceleration, or by driving and allowing the vehicle he operated into the concrete barrier. The indictment further states Foster presented a deadly weapon, a 2006 Infiniti vehicle, in the commission of the felony on count 1 and 2. It was not clear as of press time where on Interstate 20 in Ward County the accident happened. Foster is currently in custody in Ward County Jail, being held on a $50,000 bond. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of 2 to 20 years and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Mobile Health Care Unit Unveiled. Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, also known as TTUHSC, the Permian Strategic Partnership, PSP, and the Caring Foundation of Texas, CFT, jointly announced a new partnership that will bring expanded access to quality, affordable health care to the Permian Basin and surrounding rural communities. The partnership and generous funding by the PSP initially paved the way for the launch of TTUHSC's Medicine on the Move initiative, which features two newly outfitted mobile units. The new mobile units will create a vital access point into primary care, as well as mental health and chronic disease management for rural patients across the Permian Basin by deploying telehealth technology to host a schedule of clinics. Quote, "This initiative will provide local communities, especially those in rural areas, with expanded access to quality and affordable health care," said Tracy Bentley, president and CEO of the PSP. Quote, "Even further, students at the Texas Tech Health Sciences Center are gaining firsthand knowledge and experience right here in the Permian Basin. These mobile medical vans will serve those who are underinsured or uninsured and will focus on important treatments and services, including immunizations, preventative screenings, primary medical care, mental health services, and chronic disease management. This is another critical piece in our overall healthcare efforts across the region," end quote. As part of the Medicine on the Move initiative, TTUHSC will create a pipeline for patients to build connections with the healthcare system in their community. Connecting with rural areas and fostering relationships between local healthcare groups and patients is essential to patient care. According to the 2020 County Health Rankings and Roadmaps Yearly Report, a large number of counties in the Permian Basin rank low in health outcomes. Quote, "Our passion is improving health outcomes in the most unreached, underserved communities of West Texas," said Timothy Benton, M.D., Regional Dean for TTUHSC School of Medicine. Quote, "This partnership will transform healthcare by allowing us to serve patients and communities that delay seeking care or might not otherwise," end quote. The Caring Foundation's signature program is the CareVan program, which provides access to immunizations, oral care, and health education for uninsured or medically underserved children at no cost to their families. Quote, "Removing barriers to preventative health services is at the heart of what we do at the Caring Foundation of Texas," said Sheena Payne, Executive Director for CFT. Continuing the quote, "This important partnership tremendously expands the reach of our CareVan program to provide free essential health care and immunizations to underserved children in rural West Texas," end quote. Medicine on the Move will provide mobile health clinics and telemedicine clinics, improve access to basic health care and entry into the system, and provide primary care visits, mental health, and chronic disease management. WMH Board approves grant. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The Ward Memorial Hospital Board of Managers agreed to a contract that formalized the $3 million grant from the FMH Foundation in last Thursday's meeting. The award of the Florence Marie Hall grant was announced in the February 10th meeting of the managers. After signatures of Hospital Board Chairman Dr. John Fawcett and County Judge Greg Holly are obtained, the check for $3 million will be issued. The funds will be used for renovation and expansion of the medical surgical unit of the hospital, primarily modernizing the patient rooms to include better access to restrooms and modifying the rooms to be ADA compliant. Managers present for the meeting were Dr. Fawcett, Jeff Burdick, Larry Hunt, Angel Fuentes, Gerald Carlson, Lisa Stewart, and Frank Heslin, who arrived late. Manager Tommy Escamilla was not present. The managers approved the purchase of a cardiac rehab four-channel system from Life Systems International of Charlotte, North Carolina. The system will improve the capability and care for cardiac patients with its automated patient monitoring and clinical documentation system. Cost of the system was stated at $34,000. Installation can be accomplished in about 6 to 8 weeks after the placement of the order. An agreement with Healthcare Resource Group, HRG, was approved to improve medical coding for the clinics and the hospital. HRG will perform coding validation reviews to ensure HRG staff meet or exceed the minimum quality expectation of 95% coding accuracy. The improved coding will improve billing accuracy and result in a faster turnaround of payment, hospital CEO Leticia Rodriguez said. Accounts payable, as presented by hospital controller Belinda Hinojos, total of $694,000 was approved. Cash as of February 23rd was $5.75 million, and year-to-date collections were $1.92 million. The hospital has received a transfer from Ward County of $750,000, with another $750,000 remaining. Rodriguez advised the board that OHSI EMS Transfer Service has been acquired by Arcadia. quote, "We see this as a good move as Arcadia has larger staff and will improve availability," she said. In routine business, minutes of the February 10th meeting were approved. The next meeting of the managers will be held on March 10th at 6:15 p.m. in the Physical Therapy Building at 420 South Ike Street. The meeting is open to the public.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.